Rings, Swords, and Monsters, Lecture 13. Arthurian Fantasy.
Up until this point, I've really held off on discussing Arthurian literature, even though it's such an important part of fantasy and has been since before there was fantasy. There's been Arthur stories that go back into the distant, distant past. But the problem with Arthurian fantasy is it's not clear what genre it belongs to. And in this lecture and the next one, I'm going to be talking about works that may be in more than one genre, or at least are not completely comfortable inside the fantasy genre. Now, one of the big reasons that Arthurian literature doesn't quite fit into fantasy literature is that it didn't develop in the late 19th and early 20th centuries the way fantasy literature did. Arthurian literature goes way, way, way back, and it's been influential in different ways in different centuries, almost as long as there have been English speakers. Arthurian literature is also so varied and so popular that it's really hard to trace out a single line of descent. It's what biologists would call a reticulated genealogy that's like woven like a basket, where something from one century influences something from another, but then something contemporary influences it also. And you can't make it into a nice straight line the way you can, say, Beowulf, Gawain and the Green Knight, Lord of the Rings, Stephen R. Donaldson, or something like that. Arthurian literature doesn't work that way. It's such a major cultural industry, and it's so contested in that various different writers want to own Arthurian literature in their own ways that it's hard to pin down. So, for the purposes of this discussion, I'm going to make a gross oversimplification of Arthurian literature in the 20th century. That would be Arthurian fantasy, and focus really on three authors. Most important of these is T.H. White, who wrote The Once and Future King. Now, White's important, first of all, because he predates Tolkien, so he shows what you can do with fantasy before Tolkien has come along. But he's also important because his style of fantasy is so influential later on, and also because he shows the evolution from children's fantasy to adult fantasy in the same book, not even in the same series of books. We're also then going to talk about Mary Stuart, the great successful Arthurian fantasist of the 1970s and very early 80s. And then we'll end with Marion Zimmer Bradley, whose Mists of Avalon and subsequent sequels to those books really set the stage for a flowering of Arthurian literature that's still going on now in a way that's invited new writers and new approaches into the genre. Now, theoretically, Arthurian literature goes all the way back to the historical King Arthur. If you think I'm going to open that can of worms, you're mistaken. As best as scholars can tell, if there was any historical King Arthur figure, he would have had to be back in the 5th or 6th centuries, in between the fall of Rome and the rise of the Anglo-Saxon kingdoms. And we say this because after that point in time, we really have a pretty good record in England, and there's no King Arthur in that record.